Hello, Rob here. Welcome to another episode of Press X, the Geek Show's exclusive video game podcast. More archive stuff to get through. And this one, again, it's two episodes. And the first half, though, it's not me and the other Rob, because at the time of recording this one, he was abroad, I believe, if memory serves. So, sitting in for him is Andy, who's one of the longest-standing presences with the Geek Show. So there's that. And that one we talk about sort of how we'd fix FIFA and WWE. But the years we use in question kind of date the episode quite badly. That being said, everything which we say still has some relevance. Probably more so now, actually, thinking about it. And in the second half, it's unrelated, really, but not all of them can be related in this sort of sense. But it's about AR, augmented reality, and virtual reality. So it's a big 180 of an episode this week. Here is the twofer episode, the double episode, and I'll check back in again at the end of the show. Hello, I'm Rob.
And I'm Andy.
Welcome to another edition of Press X. This time, we're talking about annual games.
Yeah, annual games. Games that come out every year.
Specifically, FIFA and WWE. These are games that, in my experience anyway, you'll have games that you'll buy to tide you over, but the one that you keep on coming back to is this one big annual game. I mean, some people buy multiplayer online shooters, other people buy MMOs. Me, personally, it's going to be a sports game.
Yeah, but I'll let us call them updates, especially more related to FIFA at the minute.
Yeah, so we'll jump straight in with FIFA, and we'll talk about ways which we would like to see these things improved.
So I think when we're looking at FIFA, though, I think, to me, it's the change of colour palette that did it for me this year. It took a game which was slightly different. I mean, they overhauled career mode a few years ago, but yeah, they've changed the colour this year and added licences. And for me, it's made it just dull.
Don't care. Yeah.
It's all Ultimate Team, I think, for EA at the minute. And I haven't played it, not for years.
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't put a number on the amount of hours that I spent on FIFA 18. Let's just call it hundreds. Whereas this FIFA 19, I just don't care.
They haven't changed much. It's more of a, well, as I've said, they've changed the colour of it and they've added licences, but I think it's a bit dull at the minute. They need to add something. And this is, I think my first is need to overhaul the career mode.
That's not just one thing, though, is it? That could be an entire episode of this little mini-sode. You're just, what's wrong with career mode?
Well, there used to be a game alongside FIFA, which was FIFA Manager. And I think that it would be really cool and really interesting to see that implemented into career mode, because you could do everything on that game.
Was that the one where you could... it was basically LMA Manager, but with FIFA in it?
No, it was... So it was basically FIFA career mode, but it was massive. You even had live draws where you could, similar to LMA, where you could sit and watch the draw. And I loved that better than playing the game, to be honest. But you could change your stadium. You could put sponsors in your stadium.
Oh, I remember that now. That was so fun.
I spent ages just making a stadium, and you could change your crest, and you could change your kits. And I loved it. And you didn't have to manage the team.
Yeah, I mean, that's difficult now because of all the licensing, but I think they could still do it if you made your own team from scratch. So then they don't have to worry about ruining some team's lovely licensed kit or badge or stadium or whatever. You can just be a completely fresh, brand new team.
Well, the Football Manager has added a bit of that now with their fantasy team typo.
Yeah.
And it was that, but it was on a much bigger scale. And put that in the manager mode, it'd be amazing.
Yeah, my first one is largely the same, but a bit more extreme. FIFA 20, let's say, because that'll be the next one. Should be two games.
Mm. Ooh, how so?
Because it basically is already, isn't it? I mean, they put all the time, they put all the money into FIFA Ultimate Team, and they get a lot of money from that, a ridiculous amount of money, like all the money they could possibly want from that.
Oh, yeah, they will. It'll be a lot more than what the game will sell for.
And it's all on that, though. It seems like they're struggling to legally make that a thing, you know, because Belgium said basically that Ultimate Team packs are gambling, and you're not allowed to put gambling in games like that.
I mean, I like the idea of the mode.
Yeah.
But if they put it in as an offline version of the game,
that'd be nice, yeah.
Totally offline, where you can't use the cards online, you know.
Let's just say that online and offline Ultimate Team is one game.
Yeah.
And the other game is the more traditional offline game. So you've got like manager mode, you've got cups, leagues, like a pretty stripped back version of the game. But the whole point of that game is manager mode, career mode.
Yeah.
And have them separate, two separate entities. Because the audiences are not the same thing. And trying to sell the same thing to such a diverse audience in this era where everything is different, everything is its own special little corner, seems a bit redundant, really.
Yeah.
And I think you'd win back a lot of goodwill from a lot of people who essentially are very angry about what FIFA's become.
Oh, definitely. Definitely. I think another thing I would change as well is, ironically, it's also in the career mode.
Mm-hmm.
And it'll be the re-edition of Player Manager.
Because I never played that.
It was basically, you can be a player and then a manager now, but you have to be a player and then retire and then be the manager.
So you can't be both.
Yeah, but you used to be able to just play all the time, like be a player and a manager. And also, which has just come to my head actually, I want to be a referee in career mode.
Ooh, that is a good idea.
You know, maybe you get points, like you go up your career ranking for how fair you call the games. You know, so you don't get carried away and find a team you don't like and go, that was offside. Red card, you scored a goal. Go off the pitch. But, and it'll be fun online.
Yeah.
Might not be fun for the other person, but it'd be fun online.
That's true. You could really mess with them, couldn't you? You could do, I mean, wasn't there that thing on the new one about it's basically no holds barred? You can set sort of any sort of rules. That
was another addition, which I always thought they already done. Because you can turn fouls on and off. You can, like, your bookings and offsides on and off anyway. But yeah, they added that this year. I honestly don't know what they've added.
My other thing I would happily do is a new mode. Well, not a new mode. It's an old mode. But FIFA Street.
Oh, yes.
Bring FIFA Street back and put it in as a mode. Yes. Or is it its own thing? I don't know. EA are like literally the most greedy company in the world when it comes to making all the money. So make FIFA Street a game again. And
best thing is they had FIFA Street, like FIFA Street Football, in the journey mode.
Yeah, they did in the first sort of, and I played 18. It's like the first mission, bit, isn't it?
And I enjoyed that.
It held up very well.
Mm. But yeah, be a bit more adventurous here, please.
As for anything else, that's a tricky question, isn't it?
You can't change too much for like the game of football, can you?
No, I mean, I'd like training in the career mode to be a bit more flexible.
Ah.
And when you've got like a youth player, don't say that this youth player has a potential of overall rating 68 to 70 because he's a youth player. He can be as good as his career lets him.
Yeah.
So take off that sort of limiter and be a bit more open with what the training is and what it can be and what it can do.
I like it. And maybe you could have random events where, similar to Football Manager, where they don't show up for training or...
Yeah. Also, on the youth thing, have a youth league.
Mm.
A youth team league.
Yeah.
So it promotes you to actually push your youth squad.
I like that. And they could even randomise the youth team so you don't have to put much, you know, they could have like default crests and stuff like that, you know.
Yeah.
They don't have to be much, but it'd be good to play, you know, and you see the two courts on the side for goalposts.
Well, maybe if you're in like the lower leagues.
So yeah, but I like that.
I think we've done a good job in FIFA there. We've given them some food for thought. Yeah.
So moving on to WWE 2K, whatever.
Yes. Well, where do we start with this one, Rob?
I'll go first with a most extreme suggestion. Take it off Ukes, Jukes, whatever they're called.
I think it actually is Ukes.
the reason is they've had it for way too long. Yeah. They've had it for, like, it must be at least a decade now. And the engine is really showing its age. I mean, you don't need to take it off them, really, but they need to do something that refreshes it, because it's a very old and tired engine.
Actually, Ukes might be early SmackDown. It might be nearly 20 years.
As long as that? Wow.
There it was. At least SmackDown just bring it, and that was 2001, I think.
Oh, wow, that's an age-old engine. And it's not changed a lot. It's got neater and tidier, but it is the same engine.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the graphics have got a lot better.
Have
you went back and played Just Bring It?
I assume that's why it's so buggy, because the engine's so old.
It does seem... I mean, I know they can say, what can you do with wrestling? In the same way, you can say, what can you do with football? But I think a lot of it is in the career or universe aspects of the game.
Yeah.
Needs a rehaul. Needs a revamp.
It's fine.
Oh, yeah. I spend most time I play the game, I spend on universe. But, I mean, there's bugs in it. There's the same cutscene of the superstar coming out and sitting down where watches the match, interferes, starts a rivalry. And that needs to change, I think. I get tired of watching it over and over and over again.
I've turned the rivalries off. I'm not tired of them.
Yeah, but even if you make them yourself, you're still going to do it. Even if it's an intense rivalry, you still come and sit to the side instead of basically attacking you every 5 minutes. That and add a general manager element.
I never played that, so what was general manager mode?
Basically, you started off with a draft, and you drafted your roster, and then either a computer or your mate that sat next to you, local multiplayer, drafted their other roster, and they did it with ECW as well, so you could have three.
Yeah.
And you basically competed for the ratings for your shows. You had, like, joint storylines sometimes, and you could, like, slander, and you could interfere and stuff. And at the end, you'd win General Manager of the Year award.
Oh, that's a nice idea.
But maybe add that as an option in universe mode. Have the computer or another friend, just even if it's online, take control of the other show.
That's nice.
Or steal your superstars. You could do that as well. Please.
I have three, so I'll go through the second one quickly. It's extend all the edit stuff across the board. I mean, you can make a character who looks like literally anything.
Oh, yes. That's the best bit, to be fair.
The music and the commentary, I mean, how many times... I mean, I've got Kazuchika Okada, who's like probably the best wrestler who's ever laced up his boots. But I've got to name him Rain Mackey, as in Rainmaker, because the names that are being provided by the commentary to introduce this character... woefully bad.
Just add a few more names, basically.
Yeah, and they flesh it out. I mean, throw in some birds, throw in some natural things, throw in some random Japan. I mean, there's another one. Randomly, a Japanese wrestler who had to retire early called Katsuyori Shibata, whose full name's on there for absolutely no reason whatsoever.
But yet, like, some English names aren't.
Yeah, it's just so scattergun about what... And the other one is have all of the intro songs be equal volume. Licensed ones, like Active Wrestler or Legend Wrestler, are really loud, but the created ones exclusively for this game are really quiet, whereas your created characters come to the ring and you're not sure whether there's any music on his intro.
Yeah, I can totally relate to that one as well.
It's just consistency, you know. It makes career modes, universe modes, so much better.
Yeah, and this is hard for us. For anybody listening, because we really enjoy playing this game.
Oh, yeah.
And, I really want to see a bit more modes added. I want to be a referee. So please, 2K. Please bring referee. You've done it in career mode. Just add the mode, please. And I want to, even if you get that screw job button like you did like about 4 years ago, where you can, if you got them in a submission, if you had like three specials, you could press a button and just end the match. That was brilliant. It was amazing online as well. And King of the Ring, and please, I want to add King of the Ring in Universe Mode.
Yeah, it's a proper thing, not just a tournament. My last one is have different play styles. So, like, you can have, like, Bruiser, you can have High Fly, you can have Luchador, you can have Submission Wrestler. There's different subsets and different groups of types of style that these things wrestle as. So not every wrestler wrestles the same or feels the same. So your Braun Strowman won't feel the same as a Daniel Bryan, but they do right now. So you can have these different play styles, these different, well, how they create, how they move and how they whatnot, yeah. You know, yeah, to feel like different.
It. I like it. I know. They did fix it a bit. Now Rey Mysterio can't body slam Andre the Giant like 10 years ago. Please improve it. And also, if EA does listen, have a look at 2K and how they change the menu every year for
I love the menu on this year's WWE game. It's fab.
Amazing.
I mean, this is the sort of thing that we could sort of approach annually and see what needs fixing.
Well, yes, and hopefully it's not the same conversation we have every year.
Hopefully not.
For us geeks, the cinema is sacred. Whether it's the latest blockbuster or the arrival of the new indie darling, we wouldn't trade it in for a thing. This is Cinema Eclectica. Not only do we celebrate the new, we also champion the old, forgotten and overlooked, whether that means Czech New Wave, slashers, New Hollywood, silent films, J-horror, film noir, surrealism, Shaw Brothers, spaghetti western, social realism, 80s fantasy, or pure honest-to-God trash. Even a certain little misguided attempt at a FIFA movie or an Italian director's whacked attempt at Dracula. It's all cinema, it's all Eclectica, and we love it all equally. Subscribe to Cinema Eclectica wherever you get your podcasts from, including Acast, Audioboom and Spotify, or head over to thegeekshow.co.uk to get the full archive, where there's movies from all walks of life.
Hello. I'm Professor Elemental, and whenever I'm not riding a badger around my grounds or hitting my monkey butler with a stick, I'm listening to The Geek Show, and my God, I love it.
Perplexed by the pompous, ponderous piffle purveyed by normal art critics? Well, you've come to the right place, because we're not normal. We take a not-so-serious look at the serious worlds of art and literature. Join Sarah, Andrew, Rob and Graham for a piffle-free journey through the cultural landscape of the 21st century. Literary loitering. Because you can't make a cultural omelette without smashing a few eggheads.
Hi everyone, and welcome to Press X here on The Geek Show with me, Rob. And over there is also Rob.
Hello there.
Yes, and today we're going to be talking more about video games, which we love talking about. But in particular, we're going to be talking about virtual reality and augmented reality. And we're going to be seeing where the future is with these two things. So, Rob.
Yes?
What do you know about augmented reality games? Let's start off there.
Augmented reality, it's, as far as I can tell, it's only really had like a home on mobile games where you have like a camera or a map app. And the game will put something on that thing which is adding to reality. It's augmenting reality. I haven't really seen it in anything else other than mobile games, but that's my understanding of it.
Yeah. I mean, you're talking about games like Pokemon Go, that sort of thing, yeah?
Yeah, and there was that one with they put zombies on, and it made you run from town to place to place, avoiding zombies on the map.
Yeah. I mean, it's not just Pokemon Go. There were other games. I mean, the PlayStation Vita was trying to push the augmented reality angle with games like Invisimals, for example.
Yeah.
You also had, you've got games like Ingress, which I think was also a Niantic one from 2012. That one received some interest way back in the day as well. But you've got loads of others.
Pokemon Go is the big one. I don't like it. But it got people out and active when they wouldn't have otherwise. So that it's a good side effect of it, but in my opinion, I don't think there's an awful lot could be done with AR games.
Okay.
Yet.
Okay. Because the thing is, you come down to what actually counts as a game, don't you, with AR games?
It's much more basic, I think.
It is a lot more basic. And I think part of that is because the Internet of Things is something that I think would really help with augmented reality gaming. You know, when you have, say, a fridge or a television or something like that, something that is already interacting with the internet. When you've got that, it basically helps connect with augmented reality games and you form a network where you can actually play a game anywhere. Because the whole point of augmented reality games is that you can literally play a game anywhere in reality.
Well, augmented reality goes a bit further than that, as well as like camera apps where you can take a photo of something and then the onboard AI will search for that thing online.
Yeah.
So it's a practical technology, AR.
Yes. Yes, it is. And you've got games like Sharks in the Park, which is a very bizarre game, by the way.
That just sounds like sort of a digital version of The Floor is Lava.
It is kind of like that.
If you haven't played The Floor is Lava, it's basically when you're very young, you're sat on the sofa and you threw some of the cushions on the floor and you're not allowed to touch the floor because the floor is lava.
Yeah. Or as we called it, lava floor.
All that. That works too.
You guys were a lot more grammatically correct than we were.
Yeah. Small consolation, I guess.
Yeah. But, I mean, you've got so many augmented reality games now, and it got me thinking that maybe there is a place for augmented reality games at some point in the future.
Hmm. Yes.
But then I look at what happened with VR.
Well, VR is noble. I mean, it had the PSVR, it's got the Oculus Rift, there's the HTC Vive, I think, was the one.
The Vive was the other one. And then there's all of the VR stuff on Android and iOS devices.
Yeah. It basically amounts to sticking some stupid bit of dumb kit on your face, and you are in the game, or your hands are, and your perspective is. Anyway. We're not talking about the holodeck in Star Trek levels of VR here.
Yeah, but I mean, the thing about VR is that it literally can be the future of games.
Yeah, I think there's excellent potential in the format. I think it's just the type of game that is consistently pushed out in this stuff.
Yeah.
It seems that first-person shooters have like a great deal of the focus on it, and not a lot else is really there, so I don't think there's a lot of opportunity for innovation. I mean, the closest game for innovation in VR was that Star Trek bridge game.
See, that is an aspect of VR that I really wanted to talk about, and it's the main aspect that I wanted to talk about, was the innovation and the imagination. I actually agree with you completely. There are far too many first-person shooter games in VR gaming. And there aren't enough. Right, I had to wait.
Even without shooter games, just joke games like Job Simulator and stuff like that.
Was it Lightsword, whatever it is? The one where it's basically a lightsaber, right? Things like that. They're just very simple games, joke games, or first-person shooters. And I hate that. I had to wait, 20, 30 years for an actual adventure RPG that I really wanted to play, that I thought was basically, this is how adventure games should be in-game. And that was
There's also some flight games as well. Yeah. Let's not misrepresent them.
But I'm talking about Outward. I had to wait like 20, 30 years for that game, right?
Mm.
I would love to see Outward as a VR game.
Which is that's Outward.
Outward where, you don't die, but you lose all your progress in terms of time and items and things like that, right?
Yeah.
But it is a dyed-in-the-wool adventure game where you have to plan your adventure. You have to have the right equipment. You have to know where to go, where to camp, where are the safe areas, that sort of thing. You know, you have to manage your hunger, your thirst. This is the kind of stuff that VR can do, but they choose not to. You know, it's the kind of game it's the kind of really complex, really innovative game that I want to see on VR. Because that's the type of game that I would buy a VR kit for.
There's nothing it's that killer IP, to use the industry terminology. There's no killer IP that says, of either AR or VR, that says you need this. This is the must play thing on this sort of type of gaming.
Yeah, and that's the point. And the reason why there's no killer IP on VR, or in VR, and even with AR, there's no killer IP with AR gaming either. And the reason for that is because the developers simply, they're simply doing the same thing over and over again.
Well, I think it goes a bit further than that. I think the problem is that none of it really has the support.
Yeah.
You can make something mainstream if you choose to make something mainstream. And with it being a... Let's take Xbox, for example, the Xbox One. I know a lot of people are annoyed with the bundling of the Kinect and knocking the price up.
Yeah.
But they created like a market there where they could basically do whatever the hell they want with that sort of AR gaming.
Yeah.
And really progress and push it forward. But they're... I don't know if you want to call it cowardly, but that's how I'm going to like refer to it. They did the cowardly thing of releasing like a new version or like altering the packs that were sold in shops where it was just the console.
Hmm.
Because as a concept, it might have needed fine-tuning, it might have needed development, it might have needed whatever, but Kinect was that platform to make that killer IP, to make AR or VR gaming, like the new... Well, AR gaming.
Kinect would have worked wonders for augmented reality gaming, because that's basically what it is. It's like the Wii, right? The Wii was basically augmented reality gaming when you get right down to it. It wasn't gaming sense that we knew it.
Because there was like a camera, wasn't it? You had like a camera, a little light bar camera thing in front of the TV, and you moved the controller, and the respective characters on the game moved as you moved.
Yeah. It was basically augmented reality gaming. The Kinect was the same thing. The PlayStation Move is the same thing. And this is one of the things that I think is interesting about augmented reality gaming, is that everybody seems to think AR gaming is you need a camera, you point the camera in a specific direction, and on your screen it does a certain thing.
And even before that, a lot of the games are basically only party games.
Yeah.
But on those formats. On those formats, anyway.
Yeah, but everyone seems to have forgotten the lessons of the Kinect and the Wii and the Move, which is that the camera can point at you instead. I mean, Sony did some great stuff with their iToy games.
I can't even remember that so long ago.
The iToy games were on the PlayStation 2.
I just remember it, you know, and the name.
Yeah.
It's gone back up a very long way.
Because you remember the PlayStation 2 had a camera.
Yeah, I remember it, but I just don't remember any games or any...
Yeah, there was iToy and iPet, and they used the camera.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. That's why on the PSP, when Invisibles first came out with augmented reality gaming, you had this attachment, this camera attachment for the PSP. And then when it came out on, when Invisibles came out on the PS Vita, it was like proper AR stuff.
Yeah.
I remember when I reviewed Invisibles on the PS Vita, I was pointing the camera at different colored objects in the house to try and find these little critters. This was well before Pokemon Go as well.
It's good for gaming because gaming's a very static pastime, isn't it?
Yeah, gaming is a very static pastime. But that's one of the things about augmented reality gaming where I think that it has a slight advantage over VR gaming is that VR gaming is very invasive.
I'm going to say something which is incredibly controversial for somebody or for two people who hated the movie. But I feel like AR and VR, its obvious endpoint is what was positioned in the Ready Player One movie.
I disagree.
That's a potential endpoint, though, because that is active.
It's a potential endpoint, but I think I understand exactly what you mean, and we'll get to that in a second. But let me finish this bit off first. VR games are very invasive in that you have to buy extra equipment, stuff like that. To play a VR game, you have to buy a VR visor or helmet or one of those Google Cardboard things and put your phone in it. Yeah?
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Whereas augmented reality games, you've probably already got the stuff to play an AR game. Yes or no?
Yeah, it's your phone usually, or your tablet, or, or a laptop. Or
if you've got an old Xbox 360, you've probably got to connect with it.
The Xbox should stand by the Kinect. I really do.
But if you've got an old Nintendo Wii, you've already got an AR game system in your house.
Hmm.
Right? That's what I mean. You've probably already got the stuff for AR games because we didn't notice that they were AR games. We just accepted them into our homes.
Well, it's the case with a lot of the stuff that are ahead of the actual curve of the industry.
Yeah, but you raised an interesting point there with Ready Player One. I disagree with the whole idea of Ready Player One. I think that 70 years on, we're still not obsessed with World War Two and all.
I don't mean any of that stuff. I mean, yeah, as far as active, but going into that game world.
Well, see, this is the thing. I think we can learn a lot from science fiction over in the East, where they do a lot of VR science fiction.
I know. I was just using Ready Player One as a bit more of an accessible reference point.
No, but the reason I'm bringing up the science fiction of the East is because Ready Player One barely scratched the surface of what is possible if you use your imagination with VR. Whereas if you look at stories like The Legendary Moonlight Sculptor, Ark, that sort of thing, where you basically have an entire world to explore. You are basically an adventurer in an entire world. You can go explore. You can basically do whatever job you want. You can train however you want. That, I think, is the ultimate end point for VR. So basically it becomes like a second life to your real world life.
Yeah,
it becomes like a second world.
Like that thing that they have in Ready Player One. I don't know if they have any adaptations, but like a something that you move on.
Yeah.
So physically moving through the world. You're not just sat there.
See,
you actually move too.
The interesting thing when you look at the technology side of things in Eastern sci-fi is that they generally use pods and you basically float in the pod. And I suppose you would use like haptic feedback, some kind of haptic system to basically generate the sensation of movement.
I think physically moving will be better than the sensation of moving.
Yeah, but we don't know what VR technology is going to be like in the future.
It's where the real games innovation is going forward, because as games are currently, it's just bigger worlds, fancier graphics, a bit more detail.
So here's a question for you then. In fact, just two questions to finish this off then. First one, do you think we'll ever see like a heads-up display for games? So basically, it won't just be you playing the game. You'll have something like a Google Glass or some similar kind of thing that you may wear, or you know that scout thing that they have in Dragon Ball that all the Dragon Ball fans want.
No.
But you'll
if it's going to be anything, it's going to be like some sort of a evolution of the projector technology.
Okay.
Where it can project things onto, I don't know, something. I'm not even thinking this far ahead. Some sort of projector that does AR stuff.
See, the weird thing is, I'm saying about a heads-up display, but I do know that somebody tried to design a pair of glasses that had little screens on where you could basically sit there and play your games. They had like earphones and little screens on the lenses, and you could sit there and play your games without disturbing anybody.
The thing is, if it's a projector, it's something which isn't invasive. If you have to physically put something on your face to play a game, I think you're immediately making it something which isn't going to take off all that well.
Yeah, and that's what I'm saying. That's why I said, do you think we'll ever see like HUDs for games?
Hopefully.
The other question that I've got though is, what happens if you combine AR and VR? So
complicated stuff, which is probably an episode all on its own.
Yeah. So you basically create your virtual reality world, but you can use augmented reality within that world.
Yeah, I think we visit that on its own sort of special show, because that's some sci-fi thinking, and we're already at the end here.
Yeah, we are. So anyway, let us know what you think about augmented reality gaming and virtual reality gaming. We are always interested to know what everyone thinks, so leave us a comment below. And if you want to see more videos of this type, then hit that subscribe button. Until next time, I've been Rob.
So have I. Right, here I am again, sign out at the back end of the show. Hope you enjoyed that. If you did, please subscribe wherever you get podcasts from. I know it's become kind of a trope, hasn't it, of podcasts. Click like, subscribe on YouTube is the trope, and on podcast, it's please give us a star and a review on your podcast provider of choice, because it helps with the exposure. It's a stereotype, it's a trope, but it's true. We do need that help to stand out from the crowd, really, because there's a lot of podcasts out there, especially game ones, and we're just one of the mass at the moment, so that little bit of the help would do us a great solid.
Also on the network, as you mentioned, as you heard in the middle of the show, there's Literary Light Ring that does books and art in a very satirical and sarcastic northern sense. Cinema Eclectica that does movies, four panel, which is comics show, and in the process of being redeveloped is Keyframe, which is changing its name, so it'd be interesting to see what that evolves into. But a new cast involved there, and lots to look forward to. But on the next episode of this archive blast through of Press X, it's going to be a triple bill episode, so it's all E3 2019 related, so it's probably going to be a little bit of a longer show, that one. But yeah, that's it for this week. I have been Rob. Also on the show was Other Rob and Andy. So all thank you for listening, and we will see you next time. Thanks for listening.